Thank you for downloading the Three Beards Soccer Podcast, a Baltimore-based soccer show focused on the English Premier League and the footballing world. Please follow us on Facebook and on Twitter, username at Three Beards Pod.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Three Beards Soccer Podcast. I am your host, Tom Miller, with your other hosts, Ken Lee and Tyler Offeld behind the glass. How are we doing today, gentlemen? Ken?
Probably better than Offeld.
Tyler, how are you? Fair enough.
That's about it.
Sounds about right. Sounds about right.
We are returning from our international break. Tyler is in Ocean City. I am returning from Orlando, Florida, where I spent a little bit of time with Mickey Mouse. Ken, I had fun, but down in Orlando, a couple other things happened, some of them good, some of them bad. The U.S. got their win, but that was a little early, and we were all excited. We'll get into that. First, we're going to start with the Premier League action as it has returned this weekend with another very interesting, at least, Premier League weekend. We will start with what I thought was going to be the game of the week. And that was Liverpool-Manchester United, and it did not turn out to be that way. I don't know why we were expecting it to be. Like, we were talking about offenses versus defenses, but this is Jose Mourinho's Manchester United, and any Jose Mourinho team is going to play against a rival with pretty much 10 men behind the ball, and that's what he did, and it ended up being pretty boring.
Yeah, it happens like that a lot, though, with Mao. I mean, he wants to play this mid-tier table mentality when he comes up against a big rival, almost as if, you know, a draw at this point is as good as a win. And yeah, you know, maybe it is, you know, it's possible, but I mean, from a neutral perspective, I mean, it was painstaking to watch. That's not necessarily true. The first 20 minutes I thought was, you know, pretty good because Poole was really going after them. And United was sitting back way, way, way too far. I thought that maybe Mao would have taken what, you know, was kind of like a leaky Liverpool defense and maybe tried to see what Lukaku could do early on and then sit back. But no, it was from jump street, 90 minutes of just defense. And it was pretty boring from a Man United side. But Liverpool was trying to get after it. I mean, they looked like the team that were going to win. If there was going to be a goal scored, it was most likely going to come from Liverpool. It's just when the defense is on, the offense is off. And when the offense is on, the defense is off. So I think Klopp's got a little bit of work to do. More than Mao, I mean, the bigger story here is I think just, you know, I mean, Klopp still's got some work to do. He's got to get those boys scoring. They had chances. I mean, there weren't any clear-cut chances, I thought. But
yeah,
0-0 was probably the way it was going to be. But on the side of chances and better chances, it was Liverpool, I think, on the day. But Mao got what he wanted, a point away, and onward and upward for United, it looks like. So,
yeah, I was reading some stats. It said it's been 3 years since the last time Jose Mourinho managed a win against any of the big six. And it's not a top four anymore. It's a big six, so that's actually kind of significant. I think he also has they've scored four times and in the last 10 games against the big six. So it just goes to show you that Jose Mourinho was not going in there for the win. And I don't want to be short-sighted because I realize it's a marathon, not a sprint, but Liverpool was there for the taking. The way they've been playing defense and just the way their form has been over the last X amount of games, I mean, they are there to be scored on. And it just to not even take a chance is frustrating.
They took a couple chances, but I mean, they didn't exploit the back nearly enough. I mean, Liverpool, they've got issues down the flanks, that's for sure. And they've been exposed on it, and they did kind of try to a little bit, but it was always like, you know, the end result of every single break was to get back on defense. And that's a tactical thing. So Mao had his guys doing exactly what he wanted to do, and I think 0-0 is exactly what United wanted and not what Liverpool needed. So,
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, United had one chance, really, that I saw, and that was the Lukaku ball. It was a give and go, and Lukaku went in to finish it. smashed it right at Mignolet. Mignolet made the save that he needed to. That was really the only thing that I, the only time that I thought they were dangerous. Liverpool, on the other hand, had two or three chances, including one ridiculous save from De Gea. That does have to be mentioned. I mean, he kept United in this game with a foot save from a point-blank attempt from Matip, I think it was.
Yeah, there were a couple chances that De Gea was the only reason it was 0-0. That's what I was saying. Like, in the very beginning, and there were some spurts, yeah, you know, in and around the game. But Liverpool, they were attacking today. And, you know, the defense was up to the job. Granted, they didn't have much to do because United wasn't attacking all that often. So,
no.
But when they were, I mean, the left and right sides, those are exposed areas of Liverpool's defense. And Klopp just needs to get it fixed. I mean, Klopp's got a good team at Liverpool, and it's shown today. I mean, you can get a draw against United. I mean, granted, it's a draw at home, and yeah, it's a draw that the away manager was playing for. But still, I think that Liverpool can use this as a little bit of a boost. A clean sheet's a clean sheet at Liverpool these days.
Absolutely.
I think anyway, so.
Yeah, and that's the disappointing part to me. I mean, I understand Mal's game plan on the league is to beat all the bad teams and to basically play 500 ball against the good teams, which is how you win titles. But I believe in this case, you could have taken Liverpool, who they're not on the ropes by any stretch of the imagination, but they are there to be beaten. And I guess he didn't want to go in and go for a shootout against a team with that kind of offense at home, especially in a derby match. Liverpool, Manchester United games in the past have been contentious. I didn't see that. I missed that. I miss that between them. I miss that. There's still some between them and City, but the Liverpool rivalry, the Arsenal rivalry, and maybe even the Chelsea rivalry, which is lesser than the others, have all gone downhill. Kind of like all rivalry matches have. The guys make a lot of money, so there's not as much spitting and hard tackles. But it's disappointing to see a match with that kind of rivalry going into it. You know, and that's one of the frustrations of being a Manchester United fan or any fan of a Jose Mourinho team. He's a very pragmatic manager. He just wants to get his points, and he's not going to make a try away at a rivalry team. So disappointing, but we shouldn't have expected anything else.
No, exactly not. 0-0, and it's for these two clubs, it's on to next week.
Yep, it absolutely is.
Now, I feel more hard done by it, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, Manchester United is a title contender this year, and in order to contend for the title, I think they are actually going to have to take more chances. And a team that just is taking all the chances right now, Ken, against away, home, doesn't matter who it is, Manchester City this week goes absolutely berserk on Stoke City. It is at home at the Etihad. It's not the Stoke City trap, but it is. They absolutely demolish Stoke City, who were playing with 11 behind the ball from the beginning to the end. And Manchester City has so much time in front of the goal at the end of the pitch that they are able to tap it past the goalkeeper to pass it to another player who's standing in front of the goal line. They scored like four goals like that.
It's unbelievable.
Seven total. De Bruyne's, if you don't get a chance to look at any other highlights this week, take a look at De Bruyne's deep cross from, I don't know, right where the beginning of the attacking third starts into the penalty marker for a goal, which is absolutely ridiculous. And he is just unstoppable right now as our City.
And this current atmosphere and their current form, I think that everyone on this podcast, at least, will be eating their words. And Pep is having a nice little laugh on us right now because they're rolling. And there seems to be no sign of stopping in sight. 7-2. I mean, what is that? They're beating teams by handfuls of goals at this point, week in, week out. Yeah. So, who knows? I mean, all I know is if you're a club in the Prem, you're hoping that you don't play City next weekend. You're hoping that the wheels fall off a little bit before their name comes up on your doorstep. So.
Yeah, no Aguero.
Yeah, this is Aguero-less. This is an issue. I mean,
yeah, this is scary. I mean, at one point this game, it came back a little bit. Jesus scored, Sterling scored, Silva scored pretty much in a row within 10 minutes. It was 3-0. And then Stoke grabbed two goals, one before the half and one after the half. on a Kyle Walker own goal, and it was kind of like, oh, wait a minute, game on. And then City said game off and scored three goals in the next 7 minutes. They just, they seem to be stronger mentally than they had been in the past. And I'm worried, Ken. We've been talking about it for a while. We talk a lot of trash on Pep getting into the year about how he bought his team, and he did buy his team.
Doesn't matter, though.
It doesn't matter, though.
The results, and you get a title, which it seems like they're well on their way, everything is worth it. And it just becomes, you know, these were needed pieces. Nobody cares about how much money you spent. The only time people care about how much money you spend is when you don't get a title and you don't get the results that the money demands.
So, yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, all's well. I mean, form is form. It's called form for a reason. Is Manchester City emerging as a Real Madrid, Barcelona powerhouse type that can put together 30 games unbeaten and not a Manchester United from last year streak where they have, you know, eight draws in 25 or something like that? It's more of a, are they the team that's going to have an 85% winning percentage to win the title? I mean, with the teams that they're playing against, Spurs, United, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, to take a commanding grip over this kind of league would be very impressive. It's early. They're only 2 points clear, eight games in. But as of now, they're definitely playing the best football, and they are doing it in an attacking fashion. They beat Chelsea, and you can argue a lot of things. There's only 1-0 win, but it was Chelsea away. That was the matchup I wanted to see. I thought it was a big test for them. You could say United's going to be a big test, but you can expect United to just put 11 behind the ball if it's away and 10 behind the ball if it's at home, because Jose
exactly
is not
right.
interested in going after those points.
Yeah, and it takes the luster away from it almost. Like like the game doesn't even matter when it's a big club going up against United, either home or away, because Mao just doesn't care to win those games. And he's all but admitted it. I mean, he'll never say, oh, I don't want to win these games. He's like, oh, yeah, well, it was raining today, so we couldn't play well.
Yeah, yeah. He said his deflection was, well, I was surprised Liverpool didn't attack more after being accused of defending too much. But, I mean, the bottom line is, in the last 10 games against the top six...
Which is pretty funny, not to
five,
cut you off,
I guess
to
it
say
is.
That I'm surprised Liverpool didn't attack more. I
mean, yeah, it is. It's just him being
it's him
jerk.
Being ridiculous, yeah.
In the last 10 games against Arsenal, Chelsea, City, or Tottenham, Mourinho's sides have drawn 5 and lost 5 of these games, conceding 15 goals and scoring only 4 times. I mean, that's really interesting to me that he would have no ambition at all. Because it's not like you're only playing two teams. It's not like there's Barcelona and Atletico Madrid you have to play. We're talking about 5 other teams out of the 19 that you play. That's a significant portion where you can't afford to lose all the points to them. But
it puts
a lot
of pressure on beating the other 13 teams in the league.
Yeah,
beating them handedly the way that City's beating them right now. Because right now your only hope is to stay at an arm's distance away from City. At that point, you might very well be relying on goal difference with no one is catching City at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it is 8 games in, and City through this point, or close to this point last year, were flying as well. Not like this, but they were flying in goal differential as well. And then they started hitting a rough patch where they started coughing up goals. The Champions League started to catch up with them. As of right now, though, they're smashing everybody. Champions League... etc. They're just smashing everybody. So
good for them.
Yeah, I mean, no, not good for them. I don't want them
to win titles. Being sarcastic, Thomas.
Okay.
I want the wheels to fall off yesterday.
Yeah, and even losing Mendy and Aguero hasn't knocked their wheels off. So they are a scary team, but they win 7-2.
What happens when you buy two teams?
Absolutely, Ken, and that will be the narrative. That will be the narrative if they run away with this league. I will pound that into the ground. Speaking of spending a ton of money and asking for results, Ken, the Sunday game, Everton comes back and steals a point from Tyler's Brighton team.
I would say, honestly, it was more that Brighton was about to steal 3, because Brighton on the whole had a very, very lot of luck going their way in terms of just Matt Ryan playing out of his skin, which, again, I don't have any issue. I think he's a really good goalie, and I think at the end of the day, if Brighton stays up, they might have to look back at their keeper and say thank you, because he makes saves that are ridiculous that he has no business making. But also, there was a PK call that was missed. I mean, I don't know who it was, but they're really like pretty much pulled Sigurdsson to the ground in the box. No call. Referee didn't even look at it. Pretty much shook his hand and like rolled his eyes at him and said, play on. There was another moment where another Brighton player took his studs and completely just threw it right into the shin of the Everton player. And
proper, mind you,
not even the foot that he was using to pass the ball away. So completely on purpose. And then when they finally did get the PK called against them, it was an elbow to the face that he got. It was completely on purpose. It should have been a red. Yeah.
Idiotic play. Another idiotic red card. You're in the 90th or 89th minute, and it's a free kick floated in. You turn around, you're not even playing the ball, just smash the guy in the face with your elbow.
And you pretty much make eye contact with him.
Yeah,
and like, oh, your eye's right there? Let me throw my elbow into it.
1-0, all I have to do is defend for the next 3 minutes, and we get 3 points from Everton?
Yeah, really
No problem.
Stupid.
Let me just smash this clown in the face. Like, what
really
are you
dumb.
Doing?
But at the end of the day, it's a 1-1 draw, and all this will do is continue to put pressure on Koeman, because, like your segue into this, they've spent a lot of money, and you should be putting goals past Brighton. And I don't care how good the goalie is, there should be enough chances, and you should put enough of those away to where this is, you know, a 2-1, 3-1, not an easy win, but a comfortable win. And they did play like that, in fairness to Everton. It was just not their day. And I think more than Everton's lucky to get a point, I think that Brighton's a little bit more lucky on the day. A lot of things went their way.
Yeah, I definitely see the incidents as leaning towards what should have been an Everton result. But in the end, to have to grab a penalty kick in the 90th minute is just indicative to how where Everton is at right now.
I agree with you.
I was reading some posts from Everton fans, and just basically, they're so upset with the lack of creativity up top, which is from new players, and you could argue maybe they need time to settle, Sigurdsson and I guess Wayne Rooney. But at the same time, that's Koeman's job, and Everton has to show more pulse than they're showing. They are a team that has a very rich Premier League history, and for them to finally make the move via money to kind of project themselves to at least stay in the top 7 or 8 and then fall on their face the way they have, 8 points after 8 games, 16th place, and to have to rely on that kind of penalty kick for them to get what should have been an easy win at Brighton. You could say Brighton's at home, but I mean, Brighton's got 8 points in 8 games as well and are freshly promoted. That's a game that an old Everton team would take 2-0. And to see the struggles of this Everton team, I mean, it's just more pressure for them.
Exactly. Well, I mean, not really for them. It's going to fall on Koeman, 100%. Yeah. And I don't know what's going to. I personally don't think that it's time to, you know, even start rumors of him getting his sack. But I know it's going to start for sure. It's going to start happening. But I just don't personally think that that's time for that to happen yet.
I agree.
All the money spent within the last 3 or 4 months. Let's see what he can do. I mean, it's just right now they lack a lot of, like you're saying, a lot of creativity, a lot of playmaking, really what it seems like playmaking ability to get there. But today, again, this is not a good example of that because they did create the opportunities. It just wasn't their day to get that ball in the back of the net. And luckily for them, the referee called the second PK and Rooney put it away.
Yeah, I mean, that he can still do that. But yeah, so they get their, I guess they get the result there. I mean, they needed a win, but they'll take a draw because they needed the draw too. Everton gets a draw 1-1. The other Sunday game was Southampton 2, Newcastle 2 at St. Mary's in the Southampton home match. Anything you want to add to this, Ken? Anything you want to say? I mean, it was a back and forth game, as you would expect.
It was exciting on the whole.
Yeah, I mean, overall it was. Gabbiadini finishes with a brace in this one and gets Southampton some result.
Yeah, exactly. The first goal that Gabbiadini scores, I've never seen someone dribble what looked like about a mile inside the 18. But if Newcastle is going to be defending like that, then what I said a couple weeks ago about them finishing in the league safely, comfortably, that might be a little bit of an issue, because no way in the Prem should one man be should be able to dribble from the goal line to the corner of the 18, back into the middle 18, and then put this dribbler past the keeper to score a goal. Yeah. That was ridiculous. I probably watched that two or three times because I just thought it was hilarious. Like, there's no way that the shot should even get off. There's no way that two people shouldn't compact themselves in on that and stop it before it even becomes an issue. And then that ball should never make it in the back of the net like that.
Yeah, I agree. Comical defending leads to comical results. So Newcastle needs to tighten that up a little bit. But both teams, I think, will take what they've gotten. Southampton sits in 10th place right now. Newcastle sits in 9th. So it is kind of, a fair result for where both these teams are at. Both their goal differentials are around zero. So, you know, a fair result if you considered it before the game. Another results that we had, a few more results that we had, Swansea City 2, Huddersfield Town 0. Nice win for Swansea City over Huddersfield. Anything you want to add to that one, Ken?
Not a thing. Good on you, Swansea. Finally scoring a couple goals.
Yeah.
Get a clean sheet. Home game. Give your fans something to cheer about.
Burnley 1, West Ham 1. I guess if you're a West Ham fan, you have to be disappointed by a 1-1 draw to Burnley, even if it is away. West Ham had to be thinking for more going into this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think West Ham has to be thinking that they should be getting a lot more on almost every game they've played so far, with the exception of a few, but they should have more wins right now than they do. And I can't help but think that Bilic is, he might all be on borrowed time. Like, I think if this were, like, to be a loss, and it's an if, so it's, like, doesn't even make sense to bring it up, but I think we might be talking, like, you know, depending on the next club that they lose to, there might be a lot of questions to ask, because Bilic is, what it looks like, taking West Ham as far as he can.
Yeah, unfortunately, I hate to say that, because I really liked his run that he had with West Ham a few years ago, 2 years ago, but it's what have you done for me lately, for sure, and last year was not a nice year for them. They battled relegation, frankly, for a lot of the year. So they, if they're back in that boat again, especially after their investment in the offseason, you have to expect that Bilic will be under a ton of pressure to make a move, and you could see him go, unfortunately. They sit in 15th with 8 points as well. That being said, I mean, one more win, and I know you could say that at any time, one more win, and, you know, they would be sitting in 9th. You know,
in the top 10, but unfortunately for them, they don't have that one more win because they've lost to teams and they've drew to teams that they shouldn't have. So
yeah, and the Prem is not known for its patience, so you just got to be really careful. I think Koeman has more pressure than we're giving on, and I think Bilic is in the same boat as their results. 8 games in, we're not a quarter of the way into the season yet, but these Premier League owners, they get antsy. The worst thing to happen is to go down, and they just have to make sure they're not going to go down. But when your aspirations due to your investments are top 10 and you're sitting in 18th place or 17th place come, you know, November or December, you can count on it that you're going to get a look at possibly being sacked.
Bilic is a top 10 investment. Koeman is 100% a top 4 investment, no matter what he says. He thought that it wasn't to get in the top 4, I would imagine the guy writing the check thought that they were getting the top 4. So,
yes, I would agree.
To eventually get there, and if he can't, that might be just a simple issue of small-minded mentality, and that, you know, Everton's not really ready for that, and we never will be as long as I'm at the helm, which means he might have to go. But I personally kind of like Koeman, and I have no qualms with Everton either, so I think that they should stay the course for a minute at least.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I'm not really sure what direction Everton can go in. I mean, I guess if you get some momentum, it is early, but their play has been so
tricky
poor.
To start so badly. Yeah,
yeah, it is. It is, and their owner Moshiri, he's already coming out and backing Komen, which is scary. That's usually what happens when a guy's got 2 weeks left to live. You know,
exactly. Yeah, yeah, he has the full support of the board and the club.
Exactly. And tomorrow, kiss of death. Kiss of death. Yeah, so, I mean, Bilic and Komen both in rough shape right now. And we'll see what happens with them going into next week. Another result we had, Swansea City 2. I already told you that one, Ken. You already told me.
Gosh.
You don't care about that
one.
Are
you drunk or something?
I should be drunk, Ken. I'm drunk for 16 hours yesterday with a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. I feel drunk. But Tottenham beats Bournemouth 1-0, Ken, at Wembley!
At home. Oh, my gosh. It's happened.
They've done it. And, I mean, as convincing as a 1-0 win can be, I watched the game. Dr. Pete, the Tottenham fan, watched the game.
I was going to say, is Dr. Pete even alive still? I mean, he probably struck himself dead after that home victory.
He was pretty pissed about how flat the fans were, you know. Him coming from Richmond, Virginia, he was throwing some hate out to the Wembley crowd. He just said, I don't know if it's because the stadium's too big for our fans, like we're not filling it, or people aren't comfortable, but it's unacceptable, the atmosphere for Tottenham right now. And I know you've alluded to this several times. You've flat out said it. It's not home. Yeah. It is not home. Well, grow up. Your team needs you to be chanting for them, because right now they've switched from being the best home team in the league to being the best away team in the league. So maybe if you guys could just chant a little more, yell a little more. I don't know what you need to do. Well, it's still like, stars on the field.
You go in to your house after, you know, a long week. You open up your refrigerator. You'll grab whatever the heck you want out of that fridge. But if you're at a friend's house or if you're at an acquaintance's house, which is Wembley, You're a little bit more confined to your own space. Can I even walk in there? Are we allowed to yell here? Can they even hear me because we're so far away from the pitch? Oh, they got all these things. They got all these seats. They're all blocked off up there. Like, I wonder what's going up there. Why can't we sit up there? It's just a weird place to play in. Good for them. They got their win at home. Not many more other 1-0 victories are going to look as convincing as this one. Mm-hmm. What a Ericsson. Shot, though. What a rip, though.
Ericsson gets the goal after feeding. There's actually a goal that wasn't scored. He sprayed it into Kane. He would have thought Kane, in the form he's in, would have scored it. But a gorgeous pass that he put through, a little chip ball.
He's still not comfortable enough there.
Stop it. Yeah, I think it was a good save, but Kane opted to bring it down with his chest first before shooting it, and it was a fine save. But, yeah, I mean, it was a, 1-0 win, 3 points for Tottenham, doing their thing where they stay in the top four. I mean, you can't really argue against what they're
doing right now.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, I believe that they will right this ship, this home ship. They sit in third place with 17 points, and they're deserved in third place.
Yeah.
So they'll take their 1-0 win. It's their 3 points.
Why not? I would take it.
I'm sure you would, Ken.
I wish that my club would sit back when they go up 1-0 and just be happy with 1-0, but no.
It's interesting you say that, Ken. Our next match that we're going to discuss, Arsenal 1, Watford 2. And I say it in that order because that is the order in which the goals were scored. Per Mertesacker, his first start in like 25 years, scores a goal. The commentators can't believe it. I can't believe it. Per Mertesacker can't believe it. Header. Was it on a corner or a free kick? It was a corner, right?
It was a corner.
Per Mertesacker.
It was a rocket of a header.
Rises up with his heading ability, his 33 pace in FIFA. Possibly the slowest player in the game. I'm not really sure. But Captain Badge on his arm, Ken, trying to drag Arsenal to victory. Scores a goal in the 39th minute or so, right before halftime, and Arsenal goes into the half with a nice 1-0 lead.
Yeah, and I think all is well, you know. Change
I
our
thought
mentality
as well.
I would like now. Okay. Now, what I would like to see is the same thing that every commentator said, even the guys in the game, the guys on ESPN after, the guys on NBC Sports after. Why can't we just be okay with winning 1-0? Why do we have to continue pushing?
Scrape
let's
the draw.
Let's change the mentality. Let's change the tactic a little bit. And let's kind of settle in and let's defend 1-0. Why are we going against a club like Watford? No disrespect. They are in the top four right now. So they're playing well right now. But against a team like that, we should be very comfortable in knowing that we can hold on to a 1-0 victory. And now, here we get into the suspect nature of at least the first goal. Second goal, fine. That is not a PK, my friend. It's not a penalty. It doesn't matter that it's not a penalty because it was called a penalty. But there's not a person in this world except for, you know, a couple people that I know of, either with through this podcast or people that just cannot stand Arsenal or cannot stand myself, that think that it is a penalty. But taking your shoulder to another man's shoulder and quote-unquote shepherding him to the ground is not a foul, not at midfield, not in the final third, and my friends, 100% not in the box. The softest penalty I've seen this season.
It was soft for sure. It was a little hard done. I can see the penalty. The ball was played. Bellerin is going to catch him because Bellerin is one of the fastest players in the league. He's going to catch him on the sideline. I think it was a drawn foul. I think it was suspect for sure.
It wasn't a drawn foul because it wasn't a foul. To say it was a foul, it would mean to say it's a PK, and it wasn't a PK.
I think it would be a foul if it were on the sideline. I think it would be a foul.
No way. It's a soft PK. I mean, it doesn't matter at this point because it was called. And yeah. And then the goal in the 92nd, I mean, that's more of the issue. I mean, you got it. We got to defend. We got to defend.
So my problem with that, with the second goal, is not only that before that, Ozil misses a gorgeous chance in this game. I believe it's very early.
No.
But I watched that highlight for the Troy Deeney goal in the 92nd minute for Watford. I see two Arsenal players
scored
defending.
In the semifinal. It was Tom Cleverley that scored.
Oh, that's right. Cleverley, sorry. Cleverley's 92nd minute. There are two players on Arsenal moving in the box, and there are three players for Watford moving in the box.
I know. What is happening?
I'm looking around at the whole field, especially Ozil. I'm sorry. He's so easy to target in situations like this.
I know, because he looks lackluster.
There is nobody moving back to defend their 1 point that they're going to get on the day. Arsenal has...
Very frustrating.
What in God's name are you doing? Like, there's no urgency for this?
Not defending, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, there are going to be times where people...
We're not going to bring on Ozil and think that he's going to bring a defensive impact into the game. That was ridiculous to bring him in.
You're not going to do that because they wanted to win the game, and I understand why they wanted to win the game. And probably in the past, you know, Wenger would get a ton of guff from me for bringing in Ozil when they needed to defend their 1-1. But he was trying to win the game. And I think that Arsenal fans seeing that should have been like, all right, well, you know, Ozil is a terrific offensive player. And we need to have him on the field at all times because he can be the guy that unlocks the team, right?
He can be. But let's start him then. If you want to win the game, start him. Don't wait. Ozil, I think I like Ozil. And I don't really think that he deserves a lot of the stick he gets. But yeah. Ozil takes about 30 to 40 minutes to even get going. You bring him on as a sub. Yeah. I mean,
it's tough.
You're
with
asking
him
a lot of him because and it's not his fault, Tom, that he's really good at what he does. And he lays back, and it's just he's a creative player, and he's creating things when he's off the ball, and that's hard for some people to understand. So it looks like he's doing nothing. And in that but in that second goal, he was absolutely doing nothing, and that's when it comes back to bite him. And you should be in the box. You should be defending.
It's not just him. It's just that there is no one else. There's this mad scramble in the box. There were several shots taken. Cleverley comes from, I guess he was around the 18. No one is anywhere near him. Yeah, there's two or three players. You're watching the entire Arsenal team is watching Watford bear down on their goal. If you're looking at Manchester United in that situation, just to use one team that would take their 1-1 draw away, there's 12 guys in the box. Jose's in the box guarding the near post. Like, the entire team is in the box, scrambling away, trying to get their 1 point that maybe they don't even deserve.
Or a goal.
Yeah, even
if... I'm sick of the Man United... The Man United examples are just... They're getting really played to me because...
Fine. Chelsea...
He wants to beat 12 or 13 teams in the league.
Chelsea, in that situation, is 11 in the box. Conte's in the box. Abramovich is in the box. Backup goalie's in the box. Everybody's in the box. But in this case, Arsenal...
Yeah, we're trying to score a goal without the ball.
Dudes staring at Watford players who are going to win for their team in front of their home crowd. They exactly. absolutely do. They get. I think they got 3 shots off total in about 15 seconds.
Yeah,
they got 3 shots off.
It was definitely crazy.
Cleverly crazy. Buries them for so Manchester United.
They went 2-1. Troy Deeney goes on his little rampage about how he doesn't feel that Arsenal have the cojones to win. Shut up.
As Troy Deeney is not even starting for Watford these Deeney. Days. I know
he scored a PK that wasn't even a PK. Keep your mouth quiet. Go on to the next week. Nobody cares what you have to say. And you think Wenger does? Wenger doesn't care what the fans say. You think what you say?
I like Wenger's comments, actually, after the game. He said that, I couldn't believe what I was watching, which he said before. But he took it on the chin, and he blamed it on the... I thought he finally blamed it on the team a little bit.
He blamed it on the defense and the lack of inability to put away chances, Mr. Deeney. Not the PK. He didn't blame the PK. Of course he said it wasn't a PK because, one, for fact, it wasn't a PK. And, two, he's a manager on the losing side of that call.
Yeah, sure.
If you had a PK called against you, your manager would be out saying, oh, it wasn't a PK. Definitely not a PK. And you could punch a guy in the nose and the manager's going to say it wasn't a PK.
Yeah.
You have to.
It's their job. It's their job.
Next week, Mr. Deeney, keep your mouth quiet. Nobody cares what you say.
I think Deeney's been playing for Watford. He hasn't been. I know he's like their longest tenured player, and he's a big part of their Premier League story, but I don't think he's been that much a part of their story this year.
Yeah, well he's a part of my story.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's coming off the bench. Well, fair enough. Fair enough, Ken. I won't beat it anymore into the ground. 2-1 loss to Arsenal.
As an Arsenal fan, Arsenal. Unfortunately, the other Arsenal fans listening, if there are any of you, we've come quite comfortable saying, maybe next week. And, well, there's always next season. But unfortunately for us, next season, Wenger will still be here. So there won't be next season, but there will be 2 seasons from now that we can
see, Ken.
What's happening. I think that
I've been thinking a lot about his 2-year contract. It's very similar to, use an American football example, my team, the Ravens, Ken, are struggling right now. They're 3-3, but more importantly, they're playing very poorly. And they've just recently given their coach, who had a 1-year deal, his deal was expiring, a 2-year extension. And the idea is that you give yourself enough rope to hang yourself with. That is to say that, yes, if you meet a certain level of wins or qualification for European competition, then yeah, you can have that next year, and then next year we'll judge you. But 1 year means that it's easy to cut you loose, and it's easy, you're not paying that, like what Chelsea pays all the time, where they hire these managers for like 4 years and then fire them after one, or they pay the manager for 3 years. But if you give them in 2 years, you're like, well, we gave them the best chance we had. They didn't have pressure on them all year. So
yes,
we'll see what happens.
In 10 years. I mean, I would believe what you're saying if Arsenal had a track record and history of holding people accountable, especially the manager, for the shortcomings that's happening. And I love Wenger. I'm glad everything he's ever done. I'm glad he was our manager, bringing us into the new stadium, doing what he's done. He's got a legacy. Let's erect a little statue for him. Let's save a seat for him. We'll mark it. No one can sit in it but him. But, you can't. I'm just not buying that the 2-year contract is to say go out and hang yourself. The 2-year contract is a 2-year contract. He's going to be here at the end of 2 years, unless he like really drags us down outside the top 10, or he comes out and resigns himself.
All right, we'll see. I think that he's under more pressure than you can imagine. The Arsenal fans were chanting, "You don't know what you're doing," when he was switching his subs around. If you saw that play, I think it was Holding he was planning on sending in.
Well, that's couch managing. Of course he knows what he's doing, and of course he knows a little bit more than you know about what he's doing. We watch from a TV on our couch.
You don't attack me. You don't attack me, Ken.
I'm just saying. Of course, it's easy to say you don't know what you're doing. You don't do it.
Fair enough, Ken. Fair enough. Moving on to managers who don't know what they're doing. Ken, Crystal Palace going into this game against Chelsea had scored zero. Count them, zero goals.
What do they have to lose?
Crystal Palace versus Chelsea. And I guess what's a London Derby match, although if you had asked me before the game what the over-under on goals for Chelsea would have been, I would have thought it would have been four because that's what everybody else is scoring on Crystal Palace. Instead, Crystal Palace goes up early with an Azpilicueta own goal and never looks back.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. You know my stance. I had to, luckily I recorded it. I had to watch the replay because, you know, I wasn't going to watch that game. But
I
think that if Crystal Palace had a chance to beat anybody, it might have been a Morata-less, Conte-less Chelsea.
Yeah. And,
hey, it happened. They have no creativity in the midfield. I mean, and for what it's worth, I mean, Cesc Fabregas did show up today. He was playing out of his mind. I haven't seen him play that well in a long time.
Yeah, he looked like old Arsenal Cesc.
He was creating chances, not just the crossbar, not the shot that hit the crossbar. He took that nice, like well-placed free kick, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. It didn't hit the target, but it was still, it was close. I mean, he was creating chances. He was moving well off the ball. It was just Crystal Palace was just kind of under some kind of spell today. And, it was just, they weren't going to break another record. They weren't going to continue the amount of games scoreless and winless. And it was just, unfortunately for Tyler Alfeld and the fancy guys that wear blue shirts, and fortunately for me, you, and the rest of the world, Crystal Palace not only scored their first goals, but they got their first win against Chelsea.
Yeah, I have to say it was lovely to see. When you had Zaha being the one to break them down, Zaha, I mean, he's just coming back off injury. He's a very electric player, a dribbler. Mm-hmm. And he had a really nice game. That second goal was pretty nice, but you have to say that for Chelsea to not show up, I mean, Batshuayi was garbage in this game. Is Morata, yeah, who is number nine, we've really called out a lot. But
I'm trying to tell you, Bats is not going to do it for you, Mr. Alfeld. Bats is no good.
Yeah, and he was just awful in this one. One of those things where the team just seemed to lack any kind of motivation against the worst team in the league. And
I think
the worst,
they slept on Crystal Palace is the issue. They slept on them.
You think
it was
just a trap?
I think they just slept on them. They weren't expecting anything. And who can blame them? But it's the Prem. And Palace has a good squad. So you can't really say like the beginning of the season is like anything that you can expect for the rest of the season. And now when you look at it, they have this win. They're 3 points now. They're one win away from being out of the relegation battle now. Like, that's how bad these teams are playing at the bottom. So it makes Crystal Palace look like they're not doing so bad.
Yeah, Roy Hodgson going berserk on the sideline. Probably not good for his health. He's just going absolutely ape on the sideline with a couple of his cronies. It was just fantastic to see. It's one of those things, it's not the Leicester City miracle or anything like that, but one of those times where Crystal Palace had no business playing like that against a Conte-managed team, a man known for his tactics and motivation, who won the league last year by 10 points and had an amazing year. To come in and beat Chelsea the way they did, I mean, Tyler...
They looked better than Chelsea, though.
They did.
And Tyler
they
will come in and give
them
an argument, but they looked better. It's not that you just beat them, and the own goal was kind of suspect anyway. Who knows? I mean, it deflected slightly in off of Azpilicueta.
They do that all the time, man. They take away legit goals with these deflections that are like, they're totally, it's just
saying,
like gray.
Crystal Palace was
subjective.
Breaking down that back four like it was their job today. Like, they haven't played like this since last season, and I'm glad I recorded it because I'm glad I got to see it.
Is Roy Hodgson the best manager in the universe, Ken? That's my question to you.
Let's give him the weekend. Yeah, he is this weekend.
Manager of the weekend, Roy Hodgson leads Crystal Palace over Chelsea FC. Finally, Tyler, I will let you get in on this. I'll let you defend your team.
Thank you. So, not going to take anything away from Crystal Palace. Zaha came back. They looked like a totally new squad with him up front. That new pairing between him and the other striker, whose name eludes me right off the top of my head.
Okay.
There we go. But they looked good together. They looked dynamic, and I'm not going to take anything away. We were three people down from injuries, all people that had the potential to play. I will say, I don't know if you guys looked at his face, but when Bat saw that he was being taken off, he looked like he was going to chew somebody's face off. I don't think I've ever seen pure anger on somebody's face when he got caught off.
I did
off.
See that. But oh for what? God. You played like garbage.
Yeah, he was bad.
He got pulled off. I think he needed more time.
He was terrible, man.
Yes, I mean, he wasn't going to do anything. But yeah, I did see that. I did see it, but usually that leaves a little less bad taste in people's mouths when you're playing really well and you're coming off because you've scored two goals and you don't want to get risk an injury. Like, he needed to come off because he was playing like a steaming hot bag of trash.
Anyway.
And that's what I told you a couple weeks ago. He's not good enough, Tyler. He's not good enough to run the line. And
when
you can't run the line against Crystal Palace, albeit the best bad. Crystal Palace we've seen all season, but
you know,
this was your time to shine.
No, it definitely was. And the only thing that I can take away from this is the fact that Ken, you're one of my very best friends, and now I feel like I don't have to.
That's so nice of you.
Well, no, I want to say it makes me happy to say that I can now, you know, I can kind of feel like you do on a weekly basis. So I can empathize with you, I can sympathize with you, and I feel where you are. So now, you know, now I'm there with you. I can put an arm around your shoulder and make you feel better. And what I can look forward to is Roma. Roma's injured. Morata's coming back. I think Roma has four or five starters that are not going to play this week against Chelsea. And Chelsea will have his number nine back. So on to the next one. It's the Champions League, in case you didn't remember, Ken.
I don't really remember leagues that don't have any prestige anymore.
Thank you, Arsene Wenger. So Chelsea loses to the worst team in the league, 2-1, a terrible loss, no matter how Tyler wants to spin it. Roy Hodgson, greatest manager in the universe. Now, Ken, we are going to move on to a subject that is touchy between you and I and everyone else in the United States, as the United States have been eliminated from the 2018 World Cup in Russia. Now, I'm going to let you go first, Ken, because you and I disagree on why they were eliminated. We will just say that this is obviously the worst qualifying campaign in the United States history since, I guess, like 1986 or something like that. They're throwing around dates that don't really matter because we didn't even... No one in this country cared about soccer. And you can say that no one cares now. That happens all the time. Our ESPN still mispronounces everybody's name. Jose Altidore supposedly scored against Panama, according to ESPN. I get it. Like, we're not the primary sport here. At the same time, the vast difference between 1986 and now, in terms of the amount of followers, especially hardcore followers, a lot of respect for the Outlaws, who have really brought the American fandom to respectability, and all the casual fans who follow on a just a basic level. The idea that the United States would not qualify with this roster against this competition is pathetic. I'll allow you to start, Ken.
It's unacceptable, actually. Absolutely unacceptable. And you've made it very clear that you think it's an MLS issue. My only argument to the MLS issue is when you look at the island nations that we play, there was a team we played, I want to say it was Panama, and don't quote me, and I'm not sure if Tyler has enough time to look it up, but I think the winger on Panama doesn't even play for a club team. He has a regular job, and he kind of uses the national team as, like, you know, a hobby. So I don't think that argument holds weight. And the other league, Honduras, all the Honduras club, the players, they play on Honduras club teams. And the likes of all the rest of the clubs there. Like, there's only, like, Mexico and Costa Rica, the only nations that have players that play in Europe. Your supposed, like, you know, where the only way we're going to ever qualify through the hex is to play in Europe. I don't think that holds any water, because I think we just didn't feel like qualifying. And these guys are just a bunch of prima donnas. And the issue is, the only issue is, I'll give you, is with the MLS, is that these guys have played in Europe and now they're back in the MLS where they're treated like kings. And I think it's made them a little soft. That's why I think we didn't qualify. Not because they play in MLS, because they came back to play in the MLS. MLS is, you know, for whatever it's worth, it's not going to be the greatest league in the world, but it's also not the worst league. And I would put it up against the Honduran League, the Panama League, even some of the clubs in the Mexican League. I put them up against that, and they're going to be competitive. The issue is heart. And Bruce Arena's not going to get away with anything from me. I mean, you're not going to say that his tactics and his mentality was the reason we didn't qualify either. I mean, you can't go and beat Panama 4-0. And then not even get a draw against Trinidad and Tobago? Come on. It's unacceptable. The whole thing is crazy. Now, what we have to do is we have to begrudgingly watch the World Cup because we have no skin in the game. We have no nation to watch. And we're only watching it now because we're just massive fans of the sport. But it's always more fun to watch when you've got, you know, a horse in the race.
Go Germany.
And we don't have anything. Yeah, you go root for Germany, I guess. I mean,
I always, you know, Ken, I always end up rooting for England because we follow the Prem.
Yeah, that's what I'll end up doing.
Who is that terrible?
That's what I end up doing. And not to disrespect
England. Who is that terrible?
I don't go anywhere either.
I know. I'm like, every year I convince myself the United States will not get out of the group stage, but I want them to so badly, and that the England looks good. They're semifinalists this year. And it's always the opposite. Like, England got 1 point, I think, in the last World Cup, and the United States, like, scrapes through a group of death again to face a barrage of shots against Belgium, where they should have lost 10-0, but they didn't, because they have heart, Ken. That's what you were talking about. Heart, and it's one of those things where it's like the Rocky conundrum. You can be a lesser team and win if you have heart. My problem with the United States is, with all due respect to the other teams in the hex, excluding Mexico, we have more talent on our roster than anyone else, and it's not close. So, I mean, Costa Rica, they don't have the same talent. They're very, very well organized. I give them a ton of respect for the way they play because it's all tactical. I mean, they just play it to Ruiz, and the guys make the moves they need to make. They know how to play together. Klinsmann took this team backwards. His tactics were inconsistent. But what took this team back farther beyond Klinsmann's tactics at the beginning of this World Cup qualifying cycle was the idea that these MLS players, I'm talking about Jozy Altidore and Michael Bradley especially. Michael Bradley was at Roma. He was in Italy. He was succeeding on levels that the United States national team had not seen in years from a center midfielder. You can say Claudio Reyna was up there. He played for Man City. Man City was not the force, was not in the Champions League, was not in Europa, and not in a respectable position when Claudio Reyna was there. Bob Bradley. Michael Bradley was the future of United States soccer. He moved back to the MLS for the money and took a giant step backwards. He regressed so much as to be from one of the best players on the field to a non-competent player in the field in several different key games. He was the first one to say not a single result in this hex. You know, after the Trinidad and Tobago game, not a single result is the reason that we lost. Well, you're absolutely correct, because you guys lost 5 games. And that means that the whole of your 12 points in 10 games, or whatever it was, is the reason you lost. That's even worse than losing a single game, because single game losses happen. Crystal Palace beat Chelsea 2-1. They lose that game 9 out of 10 times. And we lose to Trinidad and Tobago maybe 2 out of 10 times. But they showed up. One of those 2 out of 10 times was when they absolutely had to get at least a draw.
Just
and to
a
watch
draw.
That, and to watch
cry.
That team on the field, and to watch Michael Bradley's body language, like, we're okay, it's okay, everybody. It's not okay. You need to be running around like your hair's on fire. Not like, no, it's cool. I'm a vet. It's all right. No, you took 5 steps backwards, and you have every single year since you've been in the MLS. I don't mean to crap too much on the MLS because I like to see an American product move forward just because I want to see that. I think it'd be good for the clubs to move forward. But to take a guy who was previously a world, not a world-class midfielder, but right on the cusp of being that, and to go backwards and to get worse in the MLS is his own fault. Jozy Altidore has gotten worse. To see him be player of the week or whatever he was for the MLS this week was sickening. He should be in a hole. He was miserable in this campaign.
Miserable, though, for the national team. And the only thing, I don't want to stop you from your big rant, because you have a big passion for MLS.
I'm not allowed to swear, Ken, so it's probably better than you.
But we're not. It's not like we're talking about we made it into the World Cup and we played a group of, you know, high level, you know, European nations in the World Cup and we lost. Then I think you could stand on an argument of the MLS is the issue and we need to now progress away from the MLS and go into Europe. We didn't beat it, and it's not from a place of disrespect. We didn't beat island nations that have players that don't play on clubs, Tom. It's not an issue of the MLS. The MLS should get us through five island nations. And it didn't. It's an issue of tactical playing, style, and heart. That's what it is. It has nothing to do with the MLS. Everything. The MLS is using it as an easy excuse as to why we can't beat, you know, countries that have no business even competing with us. It shouldn't even have been close. It should have been Mexico, USA, Costa Rica, and then some island nation playing in a playoff.
Yeah,
that's what it should be. It's not the MLS's issue. It's not an MLS issue. I would believe the MLS in the World Cup. If we get knocked out of the World Cup against club countries that we should beat and we feel like we should beat, then we have an argument to say, U.S. needs to migrate its way out of MLS and start getting our top players and the future of our players, the future of our nation, into European leagues. And let's start working from there. We should 100% always. We're pretty much guaranteed to qualify for every single World Cup. And these buffoons come out here and show us that, no, it's not impossible for us, the United States, with more talent on our bench than they have in the starting 11 of these island nations. We're now watching from our couch and they're in the World Cup. It's disgusting. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, my point is not about the MLS, because it's fine that they want to grow their product. My point is about Michael Bradley. I mean, you can't say Clint Dempsey because he was 32 when he came back. You know, he did everything in Europe. He showed up in the Premier League. He showed up in European competition. My point is that now the MLS is taking players that absolutely need to be abroad and convincing them to stay so that they can take their own product and grow it.
They're not convincing them to stay. They're bringing them back with the allure of money, and that's where the issue of heart comes into play. All they care about is the money. The U.S. soccer program doesn't need to be blown up like everyone's saying. The starting 11 needs to be blown up. I don't care how old you are at this point. You don't get to play for the national team anymore. We'll find 11 new ones that want to play for a spot. You have decided over the last, 12 games? You don't want to be here. You don't want to be here because now you have to go an entire summer doing nothing. And as a professional soccer player in the United States, no matter where you play, if you're worth your salt, you should be playing in a World Cup every 4 years. And this one, you're not. It doesn't matter where you came from. Now you don't get to play.
Yeah, well, it's hard. I think I understand what you're saying, but the MLS has, I mean, you take a look at Pulisic in this game. He is the player that tried to put it on his back for the whole of qualifying, for that matter.
No way, Tom. You know that that's not true, because we had an episode where we said he didn't play well for two games.
Yes, of course he cannot play well, but who else is showing that speed of play that he shows? Michael Bradley used to show that. Jozy Altidore showed that when he was in Holland. Now he plays for, in the MLS, who's he play for? Toronto.
Some Canadian team, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, because I don't watch those games. I don't want to watch Jozy Altidore somehow be validated. Like, he deserves to be somewhere where he's trying to progress his game. I understand the MLS. I understand what they're trying to come
MLS
from.
Either. I don't care to watch those games because they're boring to me. But you're not going to convince me that because these guys play in the MLS is why we could not qualify for a World Cup.
It's not because of that.
The easiest qualifying group to get into the World Cup.
It's not because they play in the MLS. It's because they went from Europe to the MLS. They went from...
Okay, I'll give you that because that's a hard issue.
Champions League play. It's technicality. It's technical ability. It is speed of play and all those things. The MLS is growing. It's getting better. It's a more watchable product than it was 2 years ago, especially. But at this point, if you're going to take a player who is developing and take them backwards, you will see regression, which is what you saw from Bradley. Whether or not it's a hard issue, which is what you're saying, and maybe it's true. Bradley went from being like, oh crap, if I don't play well for Sampdoria or Roma, then I'm not going to play in the starting 11 to, I'm guaranteed a starting 11 spot. Like every single week because I'm the, designated player. That is the difference I'm talking about. Out the door, not challenging themselves to move forward, and instead they take a giant step backwards, and they show up for every one of these games against the teams that are from, I mean, we're calling them island nations, but essentially teams that have homegrown players in homegrown nations with less resources and less talent than the United States. We're not trying to be disrespectful on that count. We're just
not
trying to say these guys are
beating these
are players that were bred in the U.S. and then moved to Europe where they were progressing. I mean, you could say that Josie Altidore and Sunderland did not progress. I disagree because he was learning a new style. He didn't play well, but he scored 30 goals in the Dutch league. Say what you want about that. That's 30 goals in a league that has Champions League competitions that he was in. If you take Michael Bradley, his play in the, 2010 World Cup, where he was really good? I mean, he is a player that was moving on, a two-way player, that ended up taking such a step backwards that he was not even a one-way player. He didn't do anything in the Trinidad and Tobago game, and he did not lead, which is what he was supposed to be doing. He was hot garbage, and I wouldn't mind seeing him off the team. You don't get to play just because you're a designated player.
I don't want to see any of these guys back wearing the flag on their jersey ever again. I firmly believe that. Bruce Arena's already taken care of himself by resigning. Thank you. Goodbye. And now the other 11 players that start, and let's just go 32 players, 22 players, 21 players that get to play. I don't want to see any of your faces ever again. We've got 11 more that can come in that want it more than you guys. And that's it. We've got 4 years to argue about this. So let's wrap this up, Tom. I'm getting heated up.
All right. Yeah, I just unbelievably disappointing. And I'm not finished, Ken. We will bring this up again.
We got 4 years to do it.
Around World Cup time. And these guys can wear that for the rest of their lives. How poorly they played in a group where... I mean, look at the group that Argentina's in. Brazil, Chile, Uruguay. Where would we finish in that group, Ken? 12th out of 10 teams? Like, you show up the way they did. They would have lost every single game.
This group
was pathetic.
Yes.
Across the board. I don't think it's tactics. I think it's guys making decisions that they don't really care. And we left them to continue to play even when they weren't playing well enough. And it's hard to say, I don't agree with you that we could replace them. That's the problem. I want to see all of our top 10.
It's not a matter of can we replace them. You don't have a choice. They don't want to play. They don't care.
I want to see our top talent at the age of 17, 16, even 18, going over to clubs that have time-tested academies to grow and develop players. Do not stay in the MLS, Jordan Morris. Go somewhere where, sure, you might sit on the bench for a couple years. Pulisic sat on the bench last year. But they can develop you and challenge you and make you into a player who doesn't have one or two dimensions, but all of a sudden learns new techniques that we don't offer here at speeds that we don't offer here. So I absolutely think that it needs to be a change from the top down, and more farming out to European leagues that already have this formula down, developing players.
Well, right now, mission critical number one is qualifying for a World Cup again, because we've obviously forgotten how to do so. So before we can get our players to European clubs, before European clubs are going to want American players, we're going to have to be playing at the world level. And right now, we'll be watching the world level. So.
Yep. All right, Ken, I'm done my rant.
I'm over it too.
I'm not over it in any stretch of the imagination. We don't have time really to get into next week's matches. I'll just say Tottenham versus Liverpool at Wembley is the match I'll be watching. That's Sunday at 11 a.m. That's a big one. It'd be interesting to see which Liverpool team shows up and which Tottenham team shows up for that. We'll definitely have more to say about that next week. But for now, we're over, Ken. I apologize. The United States just pissed me off. So
really,
we'll just
grinding your gears.
I'm not done, Ken. I will say that much. I am not done.
Not until we get back into a World Cup. But
no, pathetic. A huge step backward and embarrassing.
Absolutely.
Embarrassing. All right, Ken. For Ken Lee and Tyler 2-1 Alfeld, I am Tom Miller. I will say goodbye to everybody and hope everybody has an awesome week.